Howard, how are you doing?
Do I know you?
Yes, you do.
What's up, Tommy Humphreys?
Not a whole lot. Like I said, I'm just playing around with my new microphone and I wanted to give you a call for a few minutes and ask you about a few things.
Podcasts are the new cool thing.
I think they're the old cool thing too, but
Yep.
anyway, I know you invest in a lot of private deals, venture stuff, and I've heard your friends Mark Cuban and James Altucher say that the stock market is rigged. Do you
Yes.
agree with them?
Yes.
Just that's it.
But that's the important thing. I mean, admitting serenity now. I think knowing that it's rigged, or assuming that it's closer to 100% rigged than not. Therefore, anybody who learns the market should go into it with that complete assumption. And I think that alone, just knowing that, or admitting that, or even just making that up for yourself to believe that's the way it is, will set you on the course to better investing. I think James, and first of all, there's a huge difference. Mark's a billionaire and James a thousandaire. So I'm going to go, and James is a writer, and Mark is a more of a classic entrepreneur. James was a classic entrepreneur. He's kind of dropped out to write and just kind of experience a softer part of life. But Mark is still running and gunning at a high pace. I think if you spend some time with both, and I have, I think this is they're more. You really have to read between the lines of what they say. James loves the stock market. Mark Cuban loves the stock market. I think they're just trying, because they speak to a broader audience now, I think they're trying to be more careful in how they explain this. Because at many levels, the stock market is really just a distribution system for paper, and that paper being stock. And if you understand the mechanics of anything, whether it's building a car or learning how to fly, and for us investing in the markets as we teach people on StockTwits, you've got to know, the landscape, how where all the pieces fit together, and where you sit in the food chain. And Mark believes that we sit so low in the food chain that it's not worth investing. I am at the opposite end of the spectrum, saying, yes, it's rigged. Listen to Mark, but you could make fortunes doing this. There's so much signals for small investors to do this that it'd be silly not to. You don't have to, of course. I mean, you can invest in yourself, and you can, which I fully advise people to do. You don't take a grand and go into the stock market. You can become a student of the stock market, but generally, you should invest in yourself.
Build a business.
Whoo, that coffee is making me go.
Me too. Okay, so the US has something like 16 trillion on balance sheet liabilities and 60 trillion off balance sheet. How do you think these promises will be met?
Not by you or my kids. So I think, you can either, I worry about my neighbor turning me in for construction issues more than I worry about these made up numbers at the Fed. Once it got past a trillion, what the hell does a trillion mean? Apple will do $200 billion in sales this year and is not a $1 trillion company. So what's that number that you said on the balance sheet?
Well, 16 trillion on the balance sheet, 60 trillion off, and that's like the
Okay,
Medicares
so
and stuff.
we've never had a $1 trillion company. We can look at it two ways. We got to give it some context. Apple got up to $600 billion, and people thought it was, it could never get higher. They'll do $200 billion in sales, and it's hard for people to fathom how big that is. And you're talking about 60 trillion, so it's like 120 Apple companies that we can't touch or feel, that are hidden away somewhere on someone's balance
No,
sheet.
but they're hidden away in all of your minds as expectations
Yeah, it's not possible.
services.
It's Star Trek. You can't pay it off. You can only slow down the growth. And somehow, somewhere, sometime, despite all these massive numbers, there will be a liquidity event. It'll be different this time because now there's Bitcoin. And there's technology that continues to come along, and there's guns, and there's hacking, and there's, you know, a mobile world. So who the hell, why worry about it? I mean, it's numbers that are unfathomable. You got to, like, you know, you got to get out of bed in the morning. You know, it's all about learning about risk management and finding things that make common sense, finding things that have catalysts for growth, despite this massive balance sheet and off balance sheet stuff that our governments have. But despite all these stupid numbers that, and stupid activities by our governments, there's just tremendous opportunities. And I try not to worry about the macro at that level, because they're all made up numbers run by people who have, who need to worry about it. I don't.
So you say there are tremendous opportunities. Like, what are, what sort of deal flow are you looking at right now, both on the public and the private side?
I've never seen anything like it. I don't know if it's bullish or bearish, but I've learned to, luckily, you know, I'm 48. So obviously I have good flow. I've positioned myself. My whole goal has been to position myself in the middle of some good flow. And then you have, you know, simple systems that allow you to do pattern recognition. You know, if this, then that. There's actually a company called IFT, which is doing very well, that allows you to set up systems. If this happens, then that happens. And in the stock market, we've always been able to build these. Microsoft, MSN used to have ways to build all kinds of curation tools for if the stock does has this and this market cap and blah, blah, blah. Well, now we can do it across all kinds of data sets. And all kinds of markets. So, you know, I generally look on the public end for companies that have very high growth rates and very high PEs and have a lot of discussion, but not too much discussion. You know, stuff that's in the public consciousness that I can trade and invest in. And then on the private side, I look for very inexpensive things with very low friction, you know, first investor, three or four people, finished product, you know, somewhere between $1 and $5 million valuation, software. So on the low end, I do that. And on the high end, I trade and invest in high, people call it momentum, but yesterday I was calling it eclectic opportunist. You know, stuff that resonates with me, that's in the consciousness of the public and that's trending.
How long do you hold stocks for usually?
My recent example on Tesla on my blog, it was probably like 4 months. But it was like a 60% move, and I was like, well, okay.
Yeah, you'll take the money.
And then Apple, you know, was a couple of years at one point. What's the longest? I think you know, Meli is a trade that I've been in for the last 3 months. It hadn't done anything until the last 2 weeks. I don't like to be anything short term, but it seems like stocks are in this moving period, so I just take what I can get. But, you know, Apple is something that I held. Google, I've probably held almost a year right now.
Do you believe in taking, like, large concentrated bets on 4 or 5 names, or are you spread out amongst 20 stocks?
Yeah, my risk profile is that I have 100 things. Too much of a wimp to go all in. Other than on, you know, like StockTwits, I bet on myself. I've got 4 years in, and I feel like I know, I have a vision around how this could all play out, and, you know, I've been right and wrong, but generally I'm a bit of a wimp, and I'm looking for 50 to 100 ideas, and I'll continue to reinvest. So if I end up with 200 businesses, it's really not that hard with Google Docs and GChat and Skype to get caught up with your deals pretty quickly. And, you know, they move through a food chain, so it's something that I invested in very early that needs a lot of love and attention. The CEOs know as they move along, they move into new boards and new board members and people that help them move to the next level. So I try to be pretty clear with the entrepreneurs that we invest with, you know, what our strengths are and what they can use us for. And they just move through the funnel. You got to keep feeding the funnel, as you know.
Yeah, but on the private side, like, how many of these deals are you getting out of? Like 1 in 5 making up for 4 losers? Is it something like that, or are you swinging?
Well, it's been
a bull
market, right? So, you know, since I really started doing this in 2006, it's just been many home runs, and I think that's not because I'm smart. I think that's just because you look at the trend since 2006, it's been very hard to be wrong.
You mean on the private company side?
I think on both sides. Even with the crash in 08, it's been hard to be wrong, unless you sold at the bottom and never got back in. So I think it's been the best period of investing of all time, including the bubble, since 08, but really since 06. If you avoided real estate, none of us did. So I got beat up myself in stupid investments that had been, you know, 20 years in the making of a real estate bubble. But really, there's been never a better time to invest. You know, in 2000, we've still got calls from our stockbrokers. In 2012, I can pull 10,000 people and none of them have heard from their quote-unquote broker. They're buying ETFs. They're pouring money into ETFs, if they are investing at all, and have no idea what they're owning or what they're buying. They think they do again, so the public's just moved from one myth to another myth. And I think that's what upsets that's what upsets Mark Cuban and James Altucher.
So, I mean, you're right about brokers not calling their clients. It's like that whole industry's gone through a pretty dramatic shift. If you were a young guy, I mean, you were a young guy entering the investment business 20 years
ago. I am a young guy.
I know you are, but I mean, if you were my age, and you were considering a career in the investment business, what would
you
it look
18?
Like?
Yeah, are you 18?
I'm 17. So you
17. 17 Canadian.
Yeah, 17 Canadian. What kind of business should a young broker be looking at starting today?
Well, they need to decide if they want to sell a product or truly roll up their sleeves and learn the business of the markets. I think if they're good salesmen, don't focus on the markets. Find good product.
Be a relationships guy.
Yeah, I'm a relationships guy, so I'm always looking for good product because I can sell anything. So why sell a crappy product? When I invest myself, I want to don't take advice from anybody. I want to learn what I learned. So I'm on both sides of the spectrum. I love selling, so I make sure I align myself with good products. And that just comes with many arrows in my back from being sold stuff that I shouldn't be reselling. And so a young broker needs to be careful of that. Find people that have good product, and then you will scale. On the other side, it's very hard to scale learning the markets. I think you can use stock twits and tools of the day to learn these things much faster, as you've seen and watched us grow. But it's a much slower process to learn how, you know, lose your first bit of money, to panic, to do all the wrong things. You can speed up those processes, but that's, you know, at minimum 3 to 5 years. Whereas if you have a good instincts around products to sell and keep your head down and sell and continue to socialize and use the networks of the day to expand your customer base, then you can blow yourself up really nicely if you surround yourself with good people and good products. So I would recommend any young person do that first.
What makes you a good salesman, Howard?
I mean, I like it. I like people. I use all the tools of sales. You know, it's something that I like doing. I'm not scared of getting on a plane and face to face. I don't know. I mean, I was always good at it. But some people are born. This is that whole trading places thing. You know, what are you born? You know, culture, nurture versus nature. So, you know, I was born a salesman. But I'm a closet. Investor.
Well, you're not really in the closet as an investor, Howard. You're the CEO of this social network for investing.
I am. I'm talking to you.
Exactly. So what's the shout out that I can help disseminate for you? Or was there anything about StockTwits that you want to say?
What can I say about StockTwits? Well, we're really proud of it. We're 12. You love it or you love me?
Both.
Oh, yeah. Well, you just have a good soul.
Thank you.
You've had a good soul from day one. I mean, you're misguided, but you have a good soul. So people are going to trust you. I've always said this to you when I first met you. I said, find a good product to sell. And have I not always said that to you?
Yeah, I think that's pretty common advice. That's what my mom says. That's what everybody says. But
your mom must read my blog.
She reads Altucher. She doesn't read you.
Altucher, it's like the puffiest pieces of all time. He's sitting in a couch and making up stories that I can't call him on because they're so fun because I'm in his stories and they're all super animated, but I look better in his stories than what really happened.
Why does he always have a line in all of his blog posts about shit. It's like everyone.
Because he's sharded many a time. The James is just a solid, interesting dude and a friend of mine from a long time ago. And a funny story how I met James, like, on my blog. I didn't know that he had started that company sold to the street. He had started a company called Stock Picker without the E.
Right.
And I wrote a blog post calling it Nose Picker. And I was just making fun of the whole idea. And I didn't know it was him. I would never make fun of James. I actually was a fan of his writing back in like 06. And he commented on my blog. He goes, "Hey, man, I like you. Why are you?" He was so offended. And that's how we became friends. I was like, "Oh, my God, if I'd known it was you, I wouldn't have made fun. You know, I just didn't like the name and blah, blah, blah." But, you know, James is a smart guy. So you were asking...
just who you wanted to give a shout out to and if there's anything...
I want to give a shout out to our team. I mean, we could just in the community, this whole experiment, and well, first of all, the venture capitalists who backs crazy stuff like this. I wasn't willing to put my own money. I put my time and some money, but at my age, I wasn't willing to do it all myself, and I wanted to go fast. So the investors who make this stuff possible. But you know, the team, 4 years. You know, my core team's been with StockTwits 4 years, and Chris. Who's our CTO, and Phil and Justin, who are kicking people off and making the community vibrant. A community is like gardening. You know, you can't just let the weeds grow. You have to continually clip and manage. And you know, we've had a very, very hard road, you know, living through a non-viral way to build a network, which is you're always cutting people off for some basic house rules that people just don't want to do. So all the previous communication products and finance have been littered with politics and hate and personal attacks because in our industry, people don't want to use their real name. And I don't think that's the issue. The issue is there's never been anybody willing as to build a community that actually cares about behavior. Meaning you can hate a stock or hate a company, but you can talk, but you can still share ideas and mentor and journal and do all those things that StockTwits kind of allows and share. And so I don't know, I'm really proud of the idea of the whole thing and the fact that the team has bought into it and that we have, you know, on a monthly basis, you know, over a million people coming to the site and spending a lot of time on it, kind of eavesdropping and both sharing and networking.
That's fantastic. You got any plans to drop Canadian Venture stocks into the StockTwits program anytime soon?
Yeah, dude, you've been a leader in that. I think it's we don't understand it, so we've avoided it, and we feel like same thing with London. I was over in London, and it's like it's a smaller market. I mean, stocks has a very American phenomenon.
Yeah,
and I wish it was. And every culture is different, you know. Canadians love penny stocks And Americans, British people love stocks that trade in pence, you know, really penny stocks themselves, and a lot of different rules. And I think the lessons you can learn from trading American stocks, and again, we don't do penny stocks in the U.S., is we're trying, you know, you can apply them to all kinds of other industries, and maybe we haven't done a good enough job there, but like, I think learning how to invest in small, mid, and large cap American stocks can teach you investing lives in lessons that apply to every market. And I think, you know, watching AngelList and watching Twitter and watching LinkedIn and Facebook allows us at StockTwits to kind of build a platform for investors. You know, for regular dudes that want to learn how to invest.
Well, you're doing a bang up job, Howard. Thanks very much for your time.
Smoke meat, Montreal smoke meat.
Anytime, buddy.
Right. See ya.
Cheers, Howard.